Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the milk of human kindness is not pasteurized right after this. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious by now that something is wrong, very wrong, with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned in our public schools, they're banned in our public institutions, they're banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they teach these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools and our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national consciousness. You know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter can't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. And they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's at least one school left in America that's still teaching this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that we receive for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what the penalty to the law is in order to suffer from its effects. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, natural law, karma, or something else, it's very automatic. And it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org, and then click onto the archives page. Hey, one more chapter in here that I couldn't pass up. It's called The Greasy Counterfeit in here. Chapter 10 deals with butter. Last time we were talking about ice cream and all the goodness that we get from commercial ice cream. And as I mentioned, it would be humorous. It would be fun and funny if the controversy over pasteurization were harmless. But it isn't harmless, it's poison. And it's not only poisoned ice cream, poisoned milk, but it's also poisoned butter. And what's even worse, we're now using this thing called oleomargarine, and it got started back in the 1880s, about 1886, when oleomargarine came out. Now, I can remember as a kid, back in the 1940s, for crying out loud, there was this controversy over oleomargarine and butter. Now, our family ate butter. But margarine was coming on strong. And today, I don't know of anybody that eats butter. I mean, you got to go a long ways to find somebody that buys butter. They buy, I can't believe it isn't butter, or I can't believe this is butter, or something like that. And it's margarine this and margarine that, and spread this and spread that, and satin spread and this. Yeah, nobody talks about butter. Nobody drinks milk. I was in the Olive Garden the other day looking around. A few people are drinking wine now at the Olive Garden, but nobody drinks milk at Olive Garden. And I don't see people eating butter there either. You got to ask for it. It's like honey. You know, you go into a restaurant and you say, do you have honey? No, we don't have honey. Have you got butter? Well, we got, yeah. And then they bring you this, they call it butter. They bring you this stuff and you say, no, this isn't butter. This is spread. This is margarine. This is little plastic balls covered in grease. This is something that you use to grease your skidder or your loader or something. You know, this is like axle grease. And they kind of shake their heads. Well, that's what we got, you know. And so I say, okay, I'll just eat dry bread then. And that's why I quit eating bread, because you got to eat it dry. Well, in 1886, the first great impassioned controversy in the Congress developed involving a pure food issue. And this issue was over oleomargarine and whether it should have equal protection with butter. So a bill was introduced in Congress to place a tax on oleomargarine. Never before in the history of Congress had there been such a hot and emotional debate over food. Representative William Hatch of Missouri termed the controversy the most remarkable elementary contest that's been on this floor for many years. Now, the word butter appears in Scripture about 10 or 12 times. You'll find that Melchizedek, when he was sitting down eating the fatted calf with Abraham on his way over to Sodom and Gomorrah, sat down and they had butter. It's one of the foods that they were eating. Now, butter is animal fat, and it's an exception to the general rule that prohibits the eating of fat. And that's because the butter fat in the cow has the enzyme. Remember, we talked about these enzymes early on here in this series of programs. that are killed when you heat it above 132 degrees. But if you have that enzyme, it will digest that butterfat. But now with this oleomargarine, or with hog fat, we used to call it lard, they used to use that lard, you know, on bread. A lot of guys used to use that during World War II when butter was rationed. They'd take that lard, you know, and spread it on their bread and eat it. Well, the moral to the story is that there's some of these fats over here, in fact, most of them, that we cannot digest. Human beings don't have enough hydrochloric acid in our stomachs here to digest it. Fortunately, though, for butterfat, we can eat butterfats mentioned in Scripture a number of times. And there's this enzyme that's in the raw cream, but we don't have that enzyme anymore because our butter now is pasteurized. You ever notice that? Next time you're in the supermarket, take a look at it. You got pasteurized butter. That's a killer. When you eat that, you don't have the enzyme to digest it. You don't produce it in your body. This is what causes that high cholesterol and that atherosclerosis now. If you're concerned about it, that's the culprit. Now, you could eat all of the butter you want to eat if it's made out of raw cream and it's got the enzyme, because that'll digest. Well, the controversy is going on here now in the 1880s, and the issue excited a great public interest. And in the words of Representative Warner Milner of New York, it would be a new species of legislation, or largely so, in this country and into our legal system. A South Carolina senator termed it the most flagrant, unblushed, and blushing disregard of the principles of the Constitution that's ever been introduced into the Congress. Now, Emperor Napoleon III had personally promoted the quest to find a substitute for butter which would be less expensive and with better keeping qualities. A French food chemist by the name of Hippolyte Meg-Maurice patented his invention of oleomargarine in 1869, and he had done his research on the royal farms of Napoleon III at Vincennes. Maggie began to manufacture his beurre economy in Paris just after the outbreak of the Franco-Prussian War. In 1873, the United States Dairy Company of New York City acquired the Maggie patent and began producing oleomargarine. Now, many Americans at this time, some 180 in all, applied for similar artificial butter patents. Dairymen immediately began to react to this competition and began to have laws passed to regulate the sale of oleomargarine. In 1884, New York actually passed a law banning oleomargarine completely, but this was declared unconstitutional by the New York Supreme Court. Maggie's system of production of margarine was bizarre. He used chopped up stomachs of cattle, finely chopped udders of cows or hogs or ewes, added carbonated soda, coloring matter, and salt to create this new food called oleomargarine. As James Harvey Young stated, what lured them, the Chicago meatpackers, was a desire to put to profitable use everything but the pig's squeal. The packers used neutral pork fat by using a new deodorizing process. The pork fat was mixed with beef fat and then pressed through a cloth to separate the oleo oil. This was sometimes mixed with milk or cream to make a high grade of oleo. They called the mixture butterine. The manufacturers preferred this name to oleomargarine. There were many variations to this technique depending upon the manufacturers, and they were careful to package the product in tubs shaped just like those traditionally used for butter. So the objective here was to deceive you into believing that this was butter, or that it was so close to butter you couldn't tell the difference. Now remember, this is cheap, and butter is more expensive. So what we're trying to do is to appeal to your lust and greed, aren't we? See, human beings are motivated by five motivators. It's vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. So when I want to sell you something, I need to appeal to one of your motivators. It's vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, or fear. And so in the sale end of it, we're saying, hey, we've got this big white sale. We've got this sale. We've got that sale. We're selling. This is a sale. And then we bring you in here. Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. See, you think that if it's on sale, that it's being sold cheaper. Oh, no, perish the thought. It's what we call merchandising or marketing. Now, let me give you a little illustration as to how we use this marketing here to deceive, and that's, after all, what pasteurization is all about. It's a deception. And this oleomargarine here, this is a deception. Instead of giving people the complete facts, we're selling you a substitute, and this substitute over here is made out of chopped up cow stomachs. See, we're going to use chopped up stomachs of cattle, finely chopped udders of cows or hogs or ewes, and then we're going to add carbonated soda, coloring matter, salt, and create this new food. And call it butterine. I don't know. Maybe that's what you want to buy. But then why don't we label it chopped up cow stomachs and cow's udders? Huh? Let's be honest about it. Instead of calling it butterine, you know, why don't we label it what it really is, chopped up cow stomachs and chopped up cow's udders? Well, in marketing, what we do is this. We're going to make our 100% markup. So when we put on a sale over here, all we do is we reduce the price from $49.95 to $29.95. Well, hell, the price was originally $19.95, so we just hung a label on it and we said it's reduced from $49.95 to $29.95. You believe it's reduced by $20. The truth is we raised the price 10. You don't know what the hell we paid for this stuff when we brought it in here. Now you might say, well, there's fair market value prices over here, and I know what it sells for down the street, and so on. Well, wait a minute. How do you know that we're not colluding together over here to fix the prices on this stuff? You know, you take drugs, for instance. I did a series of programs here on drugs, and the pharmaceutical industry, you know, they sit there and they price fix. And you're saying, well, that violates the law. Well, when in the hell, you know, has it ever occurred that people don't break the law? Just because the law says that you can't collude in prices and it violates the Sherman Antitrust Act, what in the hell makes you think that J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, and Bank of America aren't fixing prices? You know, I think that Americans are naive to the extreme. Sometimes I kind of chuckle to myself and say, you know, hey, this is pretty good, you know. We're in a bunch of virgins in Hollywood here. Let me give you a little illustration of this. Years ago, I was running a company called the Atlantis Manufacturing Company, and the Idaho legislature raised the corporate income tax by 5%. So I took a look at my catalog, and I raised my prices by 5%. Now, just to give you an illustration, we were selling about $1,200,000 a year. I think it was $100,000 a month. So we're selling $1 million a year. Just round this off. And out of that $1 million a year, after we paid taxes and expenses, we'd net about $100,000. So we're making about 10%. Now there's a corporate income tax on that net profit. So if you make $100,000, you got to write a check for $5,000 to the state of Idaho, and you get to keep $95,000 of it and spend it on ice cream. Okay? See how easy that is? All right. So when this tax increase went into effect, that is, they raised taxes 5%. I took a look at my catalog prices and I raised my prices 5%. So instead of $1 million, I've got $1,050,000. $1,050,000. Now my taxes actually went up 5%, not of $1 million, that's your gross sales. It went up 5% of the $100,000. So it was really 5% of 5%. So I'm going to pay $5,000 tax on $100,000. Went up 5%. That's $250 more. That's 5% of $5,000. That's not 5% of $1 million. It's not even 5% of $100,000. Only one businessman, it was Skaggs and Burley, asked me about it, and I told him, I had my story straight right from the beginning. I said, the reason that I raised my prices by 5% in my catalog is because the state government raised our corporate income tax by 5%. And he said, oh, yeah, I remember reading about that in the paper. That's why I've said to you people time and time again, I've never run across an American that could count, never found a Jew that couldn't. And then we sit here and we moan and groan about the Jews taking advantage of us. Hey, children, it takes two to tango, and you've got every right, you know, to learn how to count just like the Jews do. I'm not complaining about J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, and Bank of America. Hell, I know they're Jews, and hell, I know that they're screwing us, blueing us, and tattooing us. That's why I don't do business with them. Well, the same thing is true now with the dairy industry and pasteurization of milk, which is why I'm bringing this to your attention. These guys are lying to us. They're cheating us. No two ways about it. But most of the time, they're telling the truth. You know, I didn't lie to anybody. I said I raised my prices 5% because the government raised my taxes by 5%. I never lied to anybody. I told them the truth. But I raised my prices $50,000 a year because the government raised my taxes by $250 a year. All right. Now, well, that's what we've got going on here with this dispute over butterine and oleomargarine and butter. You know, butter is a natural product made by God. It comes from cows. It costs more. It's a better product. It is the Cadillac. It is the number one product. And, of course, as Napoleon III said, he said, hey, what I'm trying to do here is come up with a cheap substitute for my army. I'm going to feed these soldiers this trash. You can rest assured that the king is not going to eat chopped cow stomachs and cow udders. He's going to be eating butter, real stuff, right out of the cow. Now, the fight in Congress made it clear that this was not a nutritional issue at that time, but an economic issue. And as pointed out by Young, one man in a single factory could make more margarine than all the butter, than all of the butter that all of the New York farmers could produce put together. Get that? I mean, we can manufacture this stuff dirt cheap, and it's being manufactured out of waste. What are you going to – when was the last time you went to the butcher shop and said, hey, give me 3 pounds of chopped cow stomach? Hey, give me a pound and a half of chopped cow's udders. Nobody wants that stuff. That's the kind of stuff that you have to throw out. That's garbage. Now, if we can figure out a way to package that and sell it to a gullible public, hey, let's get after it. And then we'll blame it on the Jews. Now, a representative from Chicago claimed that the bill to tax oleomargarine was a blatant attempt to revive the drooping dairy interests. The drooping dairy interests had indeed brought the bill about. Farming was greatly depressed, and the dairy industry was justifiably concerned about the impact of this new butter substitute called oleomargarine. The defenders of oleomargarine pointed out that the new inventions that often caused the demise of the old, and they claimed that this was a great invention of modern science and should not be obstructed because of dairy interests. They even went so far as to claim that oleomargarine was better than butter. Doctors today are now telling their patients the same thing. So the defenders now, remember, have an economic interest, and that's where we're at today with pasteurized milk and ice cream. This is an economic issue. It doesn't have anything to do with nutrition. It doesn't have anything to do with you or me or constituents out there. It has to do with profit margins. It has to do with money. Now, with remarkable pre-science, which was only begun to be appreciated today, D.E. Salmon, Chief of Bureau of Animal Industry, said that an invention like oleomargarine, which introduces a radical change to the manufacture of an article of food which goes on the table of every family in America, might produce an unexpected and remarkable effect on the public health. Now, Salmon had sounded a very wise and justified word of caution, but it added to the hysteria among the defenders of butter. Witnesses testifying before the House committee asserted that dead horses, dead cows, and even dead dogs, when they had been shot for hydrophobia and other carcasses of the city, were taken to a rendering establishment where the great bulk of these things were made into pure oleo oil. Well, Dr. Thomas Taylor of the Department of Agriculture suggested that margarine factories might be the destination for drowned sheep and for hogs dead from cholera and from a diet of distillery swill. A North Carolina congressman said that margarine was the sort of carrion that only jackals and turkey buzzards reveled in. A spokesman for the leading margarine manufacturers replied that only fresh fat was used in their product. The friends of butter remained skeptical. But many times over, it was shown during the House reports by members of the Congress that strong acids and alkalis were being used to deodorize stale and noxious fats to make bastard butter. Okay, bastard butter, that's a good term. All right, now let's listen to this for a minute. In the Bible, God gives us some warning here. And in Leviticus 3:17, he says, "You shall eat no manner of fat." Okay. Now there's a reason for that. And it's because your body can't digest this fat, and it's going to give you a heart attack and stroke. That's the bottom line. That's why he said, "You shall not see the kid in his mother's milk," because that boiling of the milk, boiling the meat in his mother's milk, boiling milk, period, is going to kill the enzyme that you have to digest it. Now, that's the bottom line. So the only guy that's really concerned about your health was God. And so he gave you this information. All right, now the manufacturers that have this fat, they've got to figure out, what are we going to do with it? And it's like I mentioned to you the other day. I said, you know, the aluminum industry had this noxious poison called fluoride that they had to dispose of. And so they had to pay a lot of money to find a place to dispose of this. Some bright guy comes up and says, "Hey, listen, let's tell people that it cures tooth decay and sell it to the nation, put it in the drinking water, and sell it to people." I've had people look at me and gasp and say, "Nobody would do that." Well, that's exactly what they did. I mean, go look it up for yourself. You know, go get on a Google search, look up fluoride, and go back in the history. You only have to go back to 1937. Alcoa Aluma, Columbia River, Washington. They're the ones that funk it up. And today we accept it. I mean, there isn't hardly a town in the country that isn't putting fluoride in the water. And those of us that are concerned about fluoride buildup in the body, you know, we have to drink bottled water. People laugh at us and they kind of chuckle and say, "Yeah, that guy's kind of a nut, a fruitcake." I wouldn't be a fruitcake if you didn't poison the water. And the average guy says, "The water isn't poisoned. I drink it every day." Well, you haven't died from it yet, Bob, but, you know, you haven't got to be age 70 yet. Now, you got the same thing going on here back in the 1880s. These guys have fat and they want to get rid of it. They got a neat plan. Let's sell it and call it butter. You know, let's sell it and call it water. You know, let's call it an additive to water. It's good for you. Cures tooth decay. Now, people didn't believe that for early on, but pretty soon you can get the FDA, you can get the Department of Agriculture, you can get the Congress weighing in on this game over here, and pretty soon, you know, we can get the police power of the state. We can get the cop out here on the beat enforcing this law, this commercial regulation. That's what we've done to insurance. You know, we make you buy insurance, and if you don't buy it, we'll put you in jail. Well, if you can make people buy insurance, why can't we make you buy oleomargarine or carpet or television sets or anything else? And the answer is we can't. We just haven't gotten around to it yet. We can sell you air. We can sell you water. Hell, in Idaho, they meter the water that comes out of the ground. The state just appropriated it and said, "We own the water. Now pay us for it." Pretty soon, they'll say, "Well, the average American breathes so many quarts of air. We own the air, so therefore we're going to tax you on it. Here's your air tax. Just sit back and relax. It's coming." Representative Grout, who will say that the things we eat are not like Caesar's wife to be above suspicion. The oleo manufacturers defended themselves against these charges and denied using most of the 50 dangerous ingredients that have been cited in the testimony. Remember, they called it bastard butter. Another serious charge leveled at the oleo makers by the dairy interest was that bacteria, parasites, spores, mold, hair, bristles, and portions of worms were to be found in the oleo. Hell, that's what they tell you today if you're drinking raw milk. The dairy industry will come along, arrest the guy that's selling the raw milk, charge him with all these crimes and say, hey, this stuff is dirty, it's unsanitary, it isn't approved, and blah, blah, blah. You know, this kind of thing's been going on for thousands of years. It isn't anything new. And so when you hear that over there, you know, take it with a grain of salt. Going on here, he said another representative, North Carolina representative, called this cheap, nasty grease, and it could be fatal. And he said that many of those who ate it might have a coroner's verdict of diet of bogus butter. Animal fat, countered the defenders of oleo, did not contain germs and worms, which were only found in the muscle of animals. Therefore, they said the charges were ridiculous. Well, hell, God told you not to eat this fat to start with. Remember? So what they're doing here is the same thing that they're doing now in the cattle industry. Let me tell you a story here about cows. If I put a cow out here on grass, she'll gain about 1 pound per day. But if I lock that same cow up in a feedlot and I feed that cow a special diet of high carbohydrates, I can put on 2.7 pounds per day, albeit it's mostly fat. But after all, when I sell this cow, I'm selling the cow live weight and I'm getting 69 cents a pound. And I don't really care whether this cow is 75% fat or not. I only get paid by the pound. I don't get paid for muscle. I don't get paid for meat. I get paid for gross weight. So the feedlot industry over here is doing the same thing. So we want fat cattle. So we want Charolais, Whiteface, Brangus. These are called fat cattle. And that's because they put on weight very rapidly when you feed them carbohydrates. So we feed them corn and other grains. This puts on weight 2.7 pounds a day. We get them up to 1,000 pounds. We run them in and we kill them. They're 25% fat. Now a buffalo is 6% fat. A Scotch Highland cow, 6% fat. A Jersey cow, 6% fat. But they only put on a pound a day. But all of my neighbors around me, they have Charolais cattle, and they put on 2.7 pounds a day, boys. Now the meat packer, he's sitting there with all of this fat. The animal carcass is 25% fat. What's he going to do with it? So he goes to the legislature and he says, we need a fat law. So the legislature puts a fat law in and it says something on the order of, if any retailer, wholesaler, or manufacturer shall be found to put more than 25% fat into the hamburger, he shall be guilty of a misdemeanor. I think it's 30% fat, 30. And so it sounds like the legislature is protecting us against unscrupulous meat packers who are putting in more than 30% fat into the hamburger. Boys and girls, if we were raising cattle the way we were instructed by God in the Bible, our cattle would only have 6% body fat on them to start with. And we would be cutting that off and throwing it away. Today, they've got 25% fat on the carcass. They got to have a place to put that. And so they go to the legislature and get permission from the government. And then they put in 30% fat in your McDonald's burger. And then you wonder why it is that America has the highest rate of cardiovascular disease in the world. This isn't an accident, boys and girls. This is being done on purpose. And this story in chapter 10 here that deals with the greasy counterfeit is just a classic example of how a manufacturing industry goes into the halls of Congress to get legislation enacted to cause us to eat foods that will kill us, which is why this doctor, good doctor here, William Campbell Douglas, calls this stuff poison. So when the next time you go to the store and you want to buy oleo margarine, what you're eating here is fat, and the fat, which is prohibited in Scripture, is going to plug up your arteries and give you a heart attack. Now, if you want to eat the butter, that's fine. The butter is pasteurized, so the enzyme in the butter is dead. So you can't digest the butter. You eat the butter, it will also plug up your arteries. It doesn't make any difference whether you're eating the oleo margarine, that is the chopped up cow's stomachs and udders and so on. It's up to you. You can choose which poison you want, the red death pill or the green death pill. Has anybody ever thought about the white life pill? Hey, let me take a break here. This is the halfway point and give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there off of our website. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse. We recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing a book here by William Campbell Douglas. It's a dynamite book called The Milk of Human Kindness Is Not Pasteurized, and takes on the dairy industry and their pasteurization process. And there's a second author in here that's also dynamite. His name is Robert S. Mendelsohn, spelled M-E-N-D-E-L-S-O-H-N-M-D, both of them doctors. Now, what we don't hear on Katie Couric is the opposite side, the contrary side of a particular position. So on the 6 o'clock news, when you're watching Katie and gang, they tell you, well, go out and get your vaccination. And you only hear one side of the story. You know, if you don't get your vaccination, there's something wrong with you. There's another side to vaccinations, and Mendelsohn points that out. Mendelsohn was an instructor. He was a doctor who taught doctors in medical school, so he was a medical school instructor. He was a pediatrician. And he lets one of the cats out of the bag that the medical profession would like to keep hidden. And he said, 90% of pediatricians do not vaccinate their children. Now, these same pediatricians are telling you, you should vaccinate your children. They're in the legislature telling the legislature to enact laws that require you to vaccinate your children. They don't vaccinate their own. 90% of them don't. Now, doesn't that tell you something? The other day I was reading the Wall Street Journal, and they pointed out that in the year, starting about June of 2009, and during the year 2010, 90% of the stock trades that are being done by the CEOs and officers and board members of the major corporations of America are selling their stocks. See, they get these stock options. Let's take, for instance, General Electric, you know, and the CEO, maybe he gets $1 million worth of stock options. Well, he's selling those. Now, what does that tell you about the officer, the CEO of General Electric, when he's selling General Electric stock? Doesn't that say to you he expects it to go down, or that there's some better investment someplace else other than General Electric stock? I mean, if the guy is, you know, come on, wake up here. If you believed that General Electric stock was a dynamite stock, wouldn't you be in the market trying to buy more of it? And if you're selling it, isn't it because you believe it's at the top or it's not going to go up as much as something else? So when I see all of these CEOs and these officers and board members selling their stocks, it sends me a signal. It says, you know, these guys don't believe in the stocks of their own companies. Why should I believe in their stocks? Got the same thing cooking here when we're talking about pasteurized milk or we're talking about pediatricians. You know, a pediatrician that doesn't vaccinate his own kid must not have very much confidence in the vaccination process. Or he must think that it's harmful or that there's a downside to it. There's something going on here, isn't there? And that's what this guy, Robert Mendelsohn, exposes. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. And the same thing here with this guy, Campbell Douglas. What I'm telling you here is just the tip of the iceberg. So when I review a book, I go through and I pull out all of the neat stuff in here, you know, that catches your attention, you know, like dirty ice cream. Did you know that ice cream has antifreeze in it? Did you know that antifreeze is a deadly poison? Well, they don't put enough in there to kill you. They just put a little bit in there, you make the ice crystals in the air fluff it up a little bit more. So ice cream, when they're selling it to you, they're selling you mainly water and air. Air and water. That's the main ingredient in ice cream, commercial ice cream. And then on top of that, most of what goes in there are chemicals, and it doesn't have anything to do with milk. And they put a little bit of milk in there and a little bit of whey, because it's a waste product, so that they can call it ice cream. And after all, they've got this standard, you know, this industry standard. And they don't have to explain to you what in the hell is in this stuff. Got that? And that's because, you know, we all know what milk is. And so since it's milk, well, then in that case, we've got this standard, isn't it? It's the standard of identity. See how they do that? They get into the legislature, and they get the legislature to enact the laws that they want to give them the marketing advantage that they desire. That's what they did with your hamburger. And they went to the legislature and said, hey, we want to put 30% hamburger or 30% fat in the hamburger. Now they put 40% in your bologna. 40% fat in your bologna and in your hot dogs. That's 40% fat. Now they're not doing that for no good reason. And then of course the legislators, they're anxious to do this because the American Dairy Association is going to give these politicians millions of dollars in campaign contributions. Those are called bribes. In the Bible, they're called gifts. Well, a gift is simply a bribe. In order for you to get these campaign contributions, we want you to pass this legislation. Here's the law that we want passed. And these whores in the Senate and House of Representatives, they're for sale. They just spread their legs, take your money, and pass the laws that you want. It's the way the game's played. So this chapter here, dealing with oleomargarine, going back to 1886, it gives you the infighting here and tells you, you know, here's the way the game was played in order to get this stuff into the into the marketplace. We got to get this stuff into the marketplace. And they did. Then after they get it into the marketplace, they make billions of dollars on it. Billions. First of all, it's a waste product that we have to dispose of. Now we don't have to dispose of it. It's no longer a liability. It's now an asset. We can sell this fat in the hot dogs and in the bologna and actually sell it and make money on it. Now, okay. And then they go out and they market this stuff, and boy, it's just great, you know. It's just great. We love it. It tastes good. If you put enough salt and sugar in it, it'll taste good. And then that's, as soon as the stuff tastes good and we start buying it, then we get used to it. And I guess we're used to these spreads. I never did get used to the spreads. I like butter, and I eat butter to this day. Now, I make my own butter here so that it's got all the enzyme in it. Again, I can't buy raw cream butter. That's why I have to have my own cow. That's why I mentioned to you the other day. There are a lot of people out there that are going back to cows now. Say you got 4 or 5 kids, and you're buying a lot of milk anyway. You can buy a cow, and the amount of milk that a cow gives in 1 year will pay for the cow. Did you know that? That's the economics of it. The amount of milk that you get from the cow, when you extrapolate it out, gallon per gallon, what you're paying for it down here at the store where you're going to buy organic raw milk, will pay for the cow in 1 year. Cow lasts for about 20 years. So, you know, you're getting paid the amount of money that it costs you for milk, meat, milk, butter, and eggs. Now, you get a calf out of this cow every year, and so you raise that calf up, and then you kill the calf, and then that gives you your meat. And then you take the butter off of this cow, or the butter fat, and you make butter. So you've got the meat, milk, and butter off the cow that pays for herself in 1 year. And then every year after that, I'll tell you what a cow is worth. A cow is worth about $5,000 in these cheap Federal Reserve note dollars. That's about 4.5 ounces of gold. And then when you extrapolate that life out for 20 years, that cow is worth about $100,000 over the course of her lifetime. $5,000 cow returns $100,000 over the course of her life. And it gives you the healthy, nutritious foodstuffs that you need to keep from killing yourself from these food manufacturers that are giving you chopped up, God, I love this one, the chopped up cow's stomachs and chopped up udders to make oleomargarine. Now you're laughing and you're sitting there saying, well, sure, they don't do that today. Of course they do that today. What in the hell did you think oleomargarine was, children? Come on, wake up. That's fat. That's animal fat. Now, yeah, it's true. They make some of this stuff out of hydrogenated vegetable oil. My God, that's another story of them by itself. I'd have to take another week off here and tell you about hydrogenated vegetable oil. I'll talk about a story now. Now, that hydrogenation over there, that's just the Red Death pill as opposed to the chopped up cow's stomachs. Now, what they're doing, see, they're not chopping this stuff up and putting it in the tub. What they do is they chop this up, they run it through, they got heat, and they take the oil out of it, and they run the oil. It's just like soybeans. Soybeans, that's a hell of a plant. Soybeans make about 100 different food products. The soybean is very versatile. And now they've got the thing GMO'd. They got genetically modified soybeans now. Boy, that's a real hand to draw there. Now, notice here the fight in Congress made it clear that this was not a nutritional issue at the time, but an economic issue. And as pointed out by Young, one man in a single factory could make more margarine than all the butter that all the New York farmers could produce put together. One man in a factory. And that's why we're selling this cheap fat in place of butter. All we're doing here is making a change. Now, this fat is killing us. Pasteurization is not benign. The dairy industry is not benign. It's a choice that you and I have to make. We make it every time we go to the supermarket, every time we buy a gallon of milk, a pound of butter, or a pound of oil grease, or whatever it is you're buying. Every time you're making a purchase, you're making a decision. And every time you make that decision over there, there's an outcome that comes from it. One of these days, you'll come down with a heart attack or stroke or cancer or something like that. And that's why I tell my students when I come in here, I say, son, if you're going to eat this kind of food, you need health insurance. Barack Obama is not screwing you people over by giving you health insurance. You people need it. See, when people get sick, they go to the ER, and Congress has enacted legislation that the hospital can't turn you away. It's the law. They've got to accept you, whether you got money or not. So you go into the ER because you got pain, and they treat you. Well, now, if you don't pay, then the government pays. And so the government's got this thing called Medicare and Medicaid, and it's going bankrupt, just like Social Security. It's upside down. So you're listening to this argument, and the government's telling you, we've got to cap these Medicare costs. Well, he's not lying to you. He's telling you the truth. The thing's going upside down. Medical care is out of control. Let me give you an illustration. When I was a kid, it cost $5 to go to Dr. Jack Walsh. That was our family doctor. Well, I had pneumonia, and I was sick, and I wasn't up to par at all. And my dad made me wait about 3 days to make sure that pneumonia was full grown, full blown. And they finally took me down to the doc. And that's because we didn't have health insurance. There wasn't any Medicare. There wasn't any Medicaid. People that got pneumonia just died. Well, unless you know, you had the $5 to go down to the doc. Now, we went down to Dr. Walsh, and then the doctor listened to me, and he came back, and he says, well, the boy's got, he's got pneumonia. And fortunately, we've got penicillin, so we can take care of his pneumonia. We need to put him in the hospital for a few days. So he instructed my dad. He said, now take this boy up here to the St. Joseph's Hospital. It was on F Street at the time in Eureka. And I got a new one now, but at the time this was the old one. So they put me in there for 3 days, put me in an oxygen tent and shot me up every few hours with penicillin, cured me. But the whole bill for the 3 days in the hospital and the doctors calling off, it was probably around 150, maybe $200. This is 1951, 52, I'm probably 12, 13 years old, probably about 12 years old. About $150 to have a case of pneumonia. It cost you $50 a day to stay in the hospital, you know, and they had nurses and they had real doctors. It wasn't the kind of hospital you see today up here at St. Al's or Cox's Medical Center, but St. John's or something. But it was a real hospital for the day. Now my dad had to pay that $150 or $200, and at the time he was probably making $300-$400 a month. You know, as a mill worker. And, it cost $5 to go to the doctor. I was at a doctor here not too long ago, and my dentist charges $105 now to fill a tooth. I know this doctor wanted $75. That was an office call. He'll talk to you for about 5 or 10 minutes for $75. How much is that an hour? I know I wasn't in there 10 minutes. He'd get six of those in, 75 times six. The doctor's getting $450 an hour. Now, back in the old days, Jack Walsh probably looked at me for 10 minutes. He was getting $5. What's five times six? $30 an hour. So back in 1951, he was getting $30. $30 an hour. Pretty good money, I'd say. In those days, if you were making $250 an hour, you were making big money. $3 was construction wages. He'd making 30 is 10 times what a construction worker's making. So doctors were getting paid pretty good back in those days. It's just that we had to pay for that, and so you wanted to make sure that you were good and sick before you went down there wasting a lot of money. Today, everybody's got insurance. Everybody. You know, if you're not paying for the insurance with Blue Cross, then you've got insurance with Medicare or Medicaid. And if you don't have any insurance, we have national socialized insurance in this country. We have had since 1965. Everybody goes to the ER. Everybody goes to the hospital. It's all paid for, whether you got the money or not. The taxpayers are going to finally pick up the bill. Now the costs are so great, the government is simply saying, well, let's just take over the business. Let's just take over this insurance thing over here and run the whole damn show. That's all Obama's done with Obamacare. We're paying for it anyway. We might as well take it over and run it and direct it. Now I'm going to opt out of that, and I wanted to point this out here in this book, in this chapter called The Greasy Counterfeit, because this thing of healthcare in the United States is expensive, and I don't want to participate in it, and I don't need to pay for it, and I don't need to participate in it because I don't eat this greasy counterfeit. I'm not drinking pasteurized milk. I'm not eating pasteurized butter. And I'm suggesting to some of you out there, now if you want to opt out of this thing over here, there's a modality for doing that. And I'm not opposed to people who want to practice socialized medicine. God love them. If those people want to band together and practice communism, let them do it. And what's that to me? It's just that I don't want to be forced into it with them. Now, they might want me to drink pasteurized milk, but, you know, I put my mind to it, and I said, no, there's a way for me to get around pasteurized milk. And I did that. And these other people are paying income tax over here, and I said, no, there's a way to get around that. Stop having income. And it's kind of a wild new idea. But, you know, they're only charging income tax on income. If you'd stop having income, you wouldn't have any income tax to pay. And I think that's pretty logical. I think that's just pretty common sense. So I avoid income like AIDS, herpes, and VD. I avoid pasteurized milk like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Do you hear all these complaints going on about banks and about how unfair they are and how they're gaffing and cheating people? And has it ever occurred to you to close your bank account and stop doing business with the banks? Do you know that if you don't have any business contact with the bank can't cheat you? I have not been cheated by a bank in 30 or 40 years. Well, not since 1981. I closed out my bank account at Bank of Idaho in 1981. I've never been cheated out of a penny by any bank from that day to this. I've never done business with any bank from that day to this. And furthermore, I'm not complaining about the Mafia or the Cosa Nostra or the IRS or anybody else. Know that I don't do business with them. And that's why I'm not complaining about the dairymen, not complaining about pasteurized milk. I don't do business with those guys. And so they don't get into my back pocket. I'm not complaining about the Jews. I learned how to count. I hired a Jew and I said, hey, Milton, teach me how to count. He did. And we have a class here called our business school. We'll teach you how to count here in business school like a Jew. And then you can make money like a Jew, and then you won't complain about them anymore. I quit complaining about them just as soon as I learned how to count. All right, now let me give you the name and address of the book again. It's called William Campbell Douglas. That's the author. He's a medical doctor. He wrote this book. It's called The Milk of Human Kindness, and it's not pasteurized. And then it uncovers the deception on pasteurization. That's all. Pasteurization, it's a deception. Just like vaccination, the military draft, the Bush tax reduction, the Pearl Harbor attack, Twin Towers, Gulf of Tonkin, cancer, these are all deceptions. And then the second guy in here, Robert Mendelson, he wrote a book, and it's called How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Pediatrician. Two dynamite books. When you get through, I don't care if they cost you $50 a piece, they would be worth it if they were double that. And I think you can probably pick them up for 10, 15 bucks a piece. Well, I'm about out of time here again, children, so let me give you a final reminder that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review talking about pasteurization this week. And we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily, worldwide, over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. We'll tell you as much as we can. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. Hey, we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, new topic. So until then, God willing, thanks for listening and good night, friends.